Do we call you Bishop? Is that what we call you, or do we call you George?
George is good, okay. George was the ninth bishop of the Anglican Diocese of Canberra and Goulburn, and he, in 2005, convened the Anglican Communion Environmental Network, and he's currently a spokesperson for the Australian Religious Response to Climate Change. And I think if Paul is right, we now have another persuader to speak to us.
Thank you very much for inviting me to speak this afternoon. Looking from this view is actually more encouraging, because looking from behind, you all look quite old, but looking at your faces, you look a bit younger. And one of my other rude aside comments to Paul was, you know, looking at this mob from the back, population's under control because they're past breeding. Last year, I was at a gig at the National Library. It was put on by Manning Clark House. The overall topic was, does humanity have a future? The whole symposium was in honour of Philip Adams, who spoke, I thought, not very cleverly. And most of the speakers were scientists and philosophers. I was the only person speaking from a religious perspective. They were very gloomy. I was quite surprised. They were very gloomy. Both the philosophers and the scientists, in terms of humanity's future. I've pondered why they were, and I think the answer is largely this, that the world is dominated by capitalism, and capitalism frames the way human beings understand themselves. Even the largest country which declares itself communist is actually capitalist. And from a capitalist perspective, we actually see our identity through what we own or have control over or have power amongst, whereas for the majority of the history of the human race, and from a Christian or religious point of view, our identity is seen through how we relate and to whom we belong, not what we own or what we have power over. And I think that the reason why the philosophers and the scientists were so depressingly lacking in hope about humanity's future is that they felt that we will not make the decisions that we need to make, because we believe that in making them, we will actually lose our identity, which is caught up with what we own and what we control. Now, this is a very, very big issue. And I think it is at the heart of the problem. Now, how have we got into this mess? You are, I'm sure, well aware that Christianity itself, in part, is blamed for us being in this mess. And it related to that last question that Paul was asked. You know that Lynn White issued his famous paper in 1960, in was it in The Scientist or in Nature? It was in one of those very famous publications in Science, in which he said that Christianity was at the heart of the problem, because Christianity preached domination, population expansion, and control of the world. And he said he didn't believe that Christianity could ever get itself out of that particular worldview. And so he put forward the proposition that as long as Christianity had an influence in the world, Christianity was going to always contribute to the problem. Now, was he right? That's a question that somebody like myself has to really have a deep answer to. And I want to tell you this afternoon that he was wrong, and what we actually need to do. I've got three things that we need to do. First of all, to tell you why he was wrong. The portion of scripture that Paul was referring to and which came up in the last question is from the first creation story. There are two creation stories in Genesis, and they are both opposite to one another. One begins with nothing, and the other one begins with humanity and works backwards. They are different stories. In the first story, there is this verse, Genesis chapter 1, verse 28, where God apparently is saying to humanity, go out there, have dominion, subdue the earth, bring it under control, you are the focus of everything. That's what it appears to say. But those who are here from a community of faith would know that Scripture speaks to Scripture, and that in order to understand this verse, you have to understand it in the context of the rest of Scripture. And in Scripture as a whole, this is where I'm going to, I hope, not be too opposite to Paul, but I'm actually going to present my own biblical ethic. And it is simply this, that humanity's ethic is primarily its view of the next generation. Now, the early part of the Bible is about the patriarchs, and the patriarchs, their reason for existence was to have a descendant and a descendant and a descendant. And they, it was necessary that they had progeny in order, in a very difficult environment, to have descendants. And as Thomas Malthus put forward the view, that in the end natural disasters control human population, and that human population, according to Thomas Malthus, would not grow exponentially because natural disasters would bring it under control. He was right. What he didn't anticipate was the discovery that you could get nitrogen out of the air and therefore you could get fertilizer for the ground, etc. But he was basically right. So that in the early days of the biblical story, it was necessary to have lots, and this still happens in much of the world today, necessary to have a lot of children in order that you could guarantee another generation. Okay. A significant part of the biblical literature is called the wisdom literature. And the wisdom literature is really about how you equip your children in order that they can actually flourish and be healthy and wise in their time. That's what the wisdom literature is about. So the Bible, particularly the Old Testament, its essential ethic is you will be judged by the way in which you provide for the next generation. Not hard to understand that. That's basically what the ethic is in the Old Testament. Now, if you think through that ethic, this is the very reason why people of faith need to be in favour of population control. Because the very rate of population at the moment puts the next generation at risk. It actually opposes the biblical basic ethic. And so from the point of view, my point of view as a Christian person, and I've become more and more convinced of Christianity the older I've got, not the reverse, except I don't like much of its sort of dogmatic assertions, is that I am now thoroughly committed to a population stabilisation and reduction on the basis of the biblical ethic that I am responsible for the well-being of the next generation, not simply of humanity, but of the total biosphere. Well, let me give you an example of that. You all know that the catastrophic moment, if you like, in Jewish history was the exile. And according to the prophet Jeremiah and the historian who writes in the Chronicles, they lost their land, they lost their country because they did not care for their land. And there's a lovely expression, not lovely, but a dramatic expression, you have not kept the Sabbaths will take back sufficient time in order for their Sabbaths to be returned. And the Sabbath principle is that you leave the land fallow, that you actually allow for debts to be paid out, that you actually care for things in such a way that things can be restored. And if you don't do that, then the land will take it back whether you like it or not. And I think that prophecy, if it is a prophecy, is so profoundly true today. Whether we like it or not, the land will take it back. The land will take back its rights from us, even if we think we can take as much as we like. In the end, we cannot, and we're putting the burden on the next generation. And unlike Paul, who, as a priest, is not allowed to marry or have children, I have 3 children and I have grandchildren, and every day, every single day, I worry about my grandchildren. And I ask, one of the reasons why I'm speaking here today, because part of my mantra is, George, when you wake up in the morning, what will you do today for which your grandchildren will thank you? And what will you do today for which your grandchildren in 50 years' time will say, silly old fart, he knew but he didn't speak. He had influence, but he didn't exercise it. So whenever I'm invited to speak, I speak. But that is, I think, the fundamental ethic we have to get in our mind, that we are here for the sake of the generation that follows, and our fulfillment and blessing is in doing that. Now, there are 3 things we need to do. The first relates to the Argentinian named Frank. There's a book just come out by an African priest called Kayoma, Dr. Kayoma. He's from the country of Malawi. He's written a book called The Ecology of Ubuntu. I won't go into Ubuntu, but it's Desmond Tutu's favourite word. And it has to do with an ethic. And it has to do with what it means to be human. And I'm with Rowan Williams, who says that we do not have an environmental crisis, we have a crisis of the human vocation, which I think is true. But in his book, he says the population of Africa is growing faster than Africa can sustain, partly because of a religious-cultural belief that children are a blessing from the divine and a blessing from the ancestors, and actually you have a responsibility to your ancestors to have more children. And he says, until you can actually break through that cultural view of things, then you actually are not going to make much progress. Similarly, Paul, I think, will forgive me for this, the Catholic Church has to overcome its problem of being against fertility control. And I'm a great fan of the new Pope, but the new Pope ultimately will be judged by the global community in the courage of the statements that he makes. And one of the statements is that Paul can be a priest and be married, but a much more important statement that he must make is that there needs to be a separation made between human fulfillment in relationship and the development of progeny. There needs to be a clear encouragement given to the Catholic population of the world, which is very considerable, as well as the rest of the world, that fertility control is a necessary part of human life in the 21st century. We marry, we live long time. We don't want to be having children every year of our life. Somebody was saying to me that the population of the world is now twice what it was when he was born, which is true, because the world population doubles every second generation, roughly. Now, if that continues, good night, basically. So that's one thing we have to do, is we actually have to have a way in which the whole world population. I stood outside the HIV/AIDS hospital in Soweto, South Africa, for a week handing out condoms on one of my visits to Africa. And it was interesting who picked them up. It was interesting to see who picked them up, and largely those who picked them up were middle-aged women. It was very interesting. So that's number one. Number two, the world needs to grapple very seriously and quickly with the obvious problems of poverty. Do you know where some of the largest population expansions are happening at the moment? That one of them is in the Gaza Strip, one of the poorest parts of the Palestinian community, one of the poorest places in the world. And population will continue to be out of control in places like that for reasons which we, I think, understand. So it's no, we need to come to grips with that issue. And one of the problems that I have with our current, with our government's current policy on refugees is not only do we turn the boats back, but we do absolutely nothing, nothing to deal with the issue of why people leave in the first place. And amongst other places, I'm absolutely scandalised by our government's position on Sri Lanka. It is, in my view, absolutely disgraceful. And it's all very well for us to say we will not take the Tamil community here into Australia, but I have been to Sri Lanka. I know where the Tamils live. And you cannot say that they are not suffering. I'm not saying the Tamil Tigers weren't, you know, they are in problem too. They were. But the reality is that the Tamil community is suffering some form of genocide at the present time. Certainly economic genocide, employment genocide, rights genocide, if not literal genocide. And for us to say to the Sri Lankan government, listen, you know, it's okay, as long as you cooperate with us, beautiful people you are, well, it's disgraceful. So the second thing we need to do is we must, as one of the so-called democratic liberal societies of the world, we have to deal, we have to be engaged with the reason why people are poor in the world. I'm proud to say that in my family, we have a number of people who work in Africa, including my sister. And we're not a very wealthy family, but we have a family trust in memory of my mother, and it is actually building hospitals in rural Ethiopia. And we've built two, and the two that we've built are the only ones that are available free to poor African women in Ethiopia. And it's not simply the building of the hospitals, but they actually are taught about birth control and why they needn't get pregnant in the first place. And also they're taught why female circumcision is a bad thing. Well, I could tell you a lot about that, but won't go there any much more. But so that's the first thing, is about how we actually make birth control available to everybody. Secondly, to deal with poverty. Now, the third thing, this is the big issue, which is terribly difficult, but it is this. There is no debate in Australia at the present time, no even acknowledgement of the fact that the mantra to which both political parties subscribe, economic growth, economic growth, economic growth, it is predicated upon population expansion. It is not possible in Australia, it is not possible for economic growth without population expansion. That is the truth. Now, that is not talked about. It's all well for us to bring people in here out of compassion, to use Paul's word, but if we're bringing them in solely in order to make us more wealthy, and we are already the most wealthy in the world, where is the ethic in that? So how we uncouple an economic system from the need to expand the population, that is the biggest challenge. And one of my fans in the church is a guy called Bishop Leslie Newbegin, and he said, he's now dead, but he said he was a missionary in India. He said, in his view, this was the greatest challenge of Christian mission, to understand this matter. Because at the moment, the church is largely acquiesce in the whole capitalist system of the world. I'm not anti-capitalist at all, but I don't believe that the capitalist system which is developed now actually can serve humanity any longer. It has to be itself redeemed and changed in order that it can serve us well. So those are the three things. So to summarise where I'm coming from, slightly different to Paul, my fundamental ethic is I am judged by the way in which I serve the next generation. There are three things to be done. One is to make sure that birth control is available, understood, and accepted by the world's population. Two, that the world's poor are dealt with fairly, justly, and equitably. And number three, that we decouple economic growth from population expansion. Thank you very much.